goodness gracious, I think of the intros to Cold Front that was put out as a promo.
Right.
I think about that a lot, and I play them, actually, because they're just, they're so cool. You know, there's a definite character to you, Webb, that that is very engaging, you know, and it seems very sincere, comes off as a very sincere person who believes in rock and roll and your credo. You are, you know, you call yourself the last of the full-grown men. Exactly, what's your stats? How tall are you?
Well, I'm not as tall as people think, or I guess as I think, because I thought I was 6'3", and they say I'm 6'2", and a little smidge more.
Okay.
But then you put on the hat and everything.
You know. Pretty tall.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty tall. Let's talk a little bit about the credo, man, because it's not just a credo for rock and roll, but it really is a credo for life. How'd the whole thing come about, and maybe you can give us a credo so the listener understands what I'm talking about here.
Well, there's a story there, and it goes back a long, long way. It was 1985, and you know, I'm now tipping my hat that I'm a million years old, but it was 1985, and we had just really gotten the band together.
Well, you know what, Webb? You're only a few years older than me, so, dude, you're not that old.
Well, thanks.
We're hitting our prime now, buddy.
You never know.
Yeah, that's right. We're just getting going, man.
But anyway, so I think we played the first gig in March of 1985, and Bobby Field was the drummer.
You know?
He was the drummer until about November of 1985, and we had rehearsed a lot in '84, even without a bass player for the most of it. So a lot went into the early stages, and you know, we were coming off that film thing and the whole character thing, and so we were on our way to our first out-of-town gig, and I believe it was Easter weekend, so it wouldn't have been long after that first March gig, and we'd never done an out-of-town thing. And back then, you know, you could get these boom boxes. Cassettes still reigned supreme back then. You could get these boom boxes that had built-in mics with built-in compression, and you could record your rehearsals, and they sounded great, and you can't even find those things now. So we had one of those in the van, and Bobby, thinking like the producer, said, well, you know, you'll probably be doing some interviews, and let's do a dry run. Who else would have thought of this, right? So I'm really in character doing the web thing, and at the end of it, he said, well, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Mm-hmm.
And right off the top of my head, I said, well, work hard, rock hard, eat hard, sleep hard, grow big, wear glasses if you need them. The Webb Wilder credo.
Gotta love
it. Story.
I gotta love it, man. And it's a great credo.
It works.
It works.
I think the Optical Association or something ought to give me some lifetime free glasses or something, and then put it up in all their offices.
Well, I can relate because I wear glasses when I need them.
Well, the funny thing is, then I got to this point where I have to take mine off to read, and then, of course, if the reading's too small, I have to put on the reading glasses, and I guess that equals bifocals, but I tried those and had vertigo. I couldn't deal with it.
Ah, well, I got the bifocal lenses, so I can, you know, I have no problems with that, and it actually works pretty good for me, man, so maybe you just need a better pair of glasses.
Well, I left them on a plane, and I thought it was destiny, you know? So the young people are listening to stuff going like, I can't believe this.
Well, you'd be surprised the listening base that we have. It ranges from 18 to 60. We got a wide listening base, and they love what goes on here at LVR. So I'm sure that they're digging exactly what you have to say, man. So I got to say kudos for the credo. I love the credo. It's something to actually live by, and I think it served you well and will continue to serve you well in the future, man. So, you know, thanks for the credo, man. It's great stuff.
You're welcome. Thank you for living it.
Okay, man. And let's talk a little bit about who you may regard as some great bands today and yesterday as well.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the thing. You always feel like you're going to leave somebody out when you talk about the ones that have gone before us because there's so many of them. But I'll tell you, you know, any genre of music has great stuff in it. And so you can't, you know, dismiss a whole genre, you know, let people go, I don't like this or whatever. And they'll just say, I don't like jazz or something. And as my late great friend Pharaoh used to say, it's a jazz is a big word to have only have four letters, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like some of everything, but the band, the rock and roll band that really got my attention in the last few years is called Jet. And I think they're great. And their first album went platinum. Of course, they had a big old hit with Are You Gonna Be My Girl? And they're these young Australian guys. And their music is pretty derivative. But, I mean, a lot of the best music is. I mean, the Stones' music is largely derivative, you know?
Yeah.
And through, because I like music that has roots and then goes somewhere with it.
Yeah.
Of course, then you and those roots led them to Jumpin' Jack Flash, which is from another planet. I mean, that song defies category. So anyway, back to Jet. They're young Australian guys. The drummer and the singer are brothers, and the singer's pretty great. The drummer's pretty great. The band's really happening. They draw on, like, Humble Pie, AC/DC, Who kind of stuff. But then they have this other thing that I like, too. I'm a big Badfinger fan, and I don't think they're trying to sound like Badfinger, but, you know, their mid-tempo ballads kind of have the same effect on me, and I really like that.
Well, that's why I ask, that's why I ask you, because you mentioned Badfinger, which is not a band that you would expect to hear, you know, being named as a band that you really like, or a band that may have influenced you, or that you have a lot of respect for. Truly a great band. When you look back, at their catalog and you look at the songs that they gave us, wow.
Oh, I know.
Unbelievable.
Oh, they had it all. They could rock. They looked cool. They had two great lead guitar players, three great singers.
Singers, yeah.
Songwriting, and, you know, prolific, and had paid their dues, and really got the shaft for all of it.
Yeah, they did. They really did.
Really a shame.
Yeah, sad story surrounding Badfinger, no doubt about that. Were there is there anyone that you would still wish to play with or write with, past or present?
Well, you know, I mean, and you got to realize that, you know, I think most people, the music they loved when they were a teen, they will usually always love. But I contend that it was great. You know, Badfinger, The Face Is Free, The Band, you know, a lot of that stuff. And of course, a lot of those people led me to, you know, Muddy Waters and Chuck Berry and.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Get Your Ya-Ya's Out probably really led me to, you know, by the Stones to Chuck Berry. And Chuck Berry is, you know, wrote the Book of Love. You know?
Well, yeah, Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the song, he didn't write the song, The Book of Love, but yeah, if anybody is the architect of rock and roll, it's him. But, I mean, you know, he drew on T-Bone Walker and Louis Jordan and all that stuff. But anyway, no, I'd really like to record with Ian McLagan and...
Faces.
Yeah, I don't know that it'll ever happen, but it would be sure cool. And, you know, I was buddies with the Georgia Satellites, and we toured together, and they loved The Faces, and I loved meeting them because they're from Georgia. I'm from Mississippi. We're about the same age, and the first show we did together, they're doing their sound check, and I'm at the bar in the afternoon at this old 688 in Atlanta, and I hear them going, bubba-bump, bubba-bump. Boom, 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 which is on Gasoline Alley, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, I know, I got these guys' number, you know. So they got to record with Mac, and I never did get to do that. And of course, he records with lots of people, and he's great. And I've got to know him a little bit, but he's pretty damn busy. And maybe one day it can happen.
I could kind of hear that, man. That'd be quite a collaboration.
Well, you know, he's played with, you know, Bonnie Raitt and, you know, Dylan and the Stones, and I mean, he can fit his thing in, you know.
What's your impression of the music industry today and yesterday?
Wow, that's a big question.
I'll tell you, Webb, I've interviewed probably over 40 national and international artists over the years, and some of these questions are questions that I ask every one of them, because you never know what you're going to hear. And you're part of the music industry. This is where you make your bread and butter.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very interesting to hear from the performer, from the artist themselves, how they view the very business that they're in.
Well, you know, the business is kind of always reinventing itself, and sometimes there'll be long, like there was a long run for vinyl, you know, and vinyl isn't completely gone. And then all of a sudden it changed, and now, you know, you see... a lot of upheaval, because downloading is a big thing, but you have a generation whose introduction to it was pretty much free.
Yep.
Which was partially brought on by the greed. And indifference of the industry by charging too much for CDs.
Exactly.
And then and then just kind of ignoring this downloading phenomenon, and then the horse was out of the barn, and who's always going to suffer? The artist.
The artist, yep.
And then you have the other thing of, if your demographic includes a lot of baby boomers, which, you know, lots of artists who are much bigger than me do, is still the generation that's the most passionate about music. So they're a big demographic. They want to hold it in their hand. They're, some of them have iPods and are hip to it, but, you know, they still kind of want to hold it in their hand. So we're sort of, and then in the 90s, everybody started talking about, you know, who needs a label? It's like, well, everybody needs money to, or time to, or to record with and to promote things with. So you can have a website, but you've got to have somebody know what to Google, you know, they
sure.
got to know about you. So I think it's, and you know, you only have one life to live, so time is ticking while the industry figures itself out. So I think that's a little bit of a problem, or a big problem. But there's a lot of good stuff that comes from it too, because of YouTube and MySpace and the internet itself, and downloading and all these different areas. You know, you can get exposure for your music quickly if somebody wants to find out. And live is still live. But, of course, you're competing with the internet and all these other things people have to do. I think in the old days, and terrestrial radio really changed. I think that, as you know, that's the biggest thing, is that radio used to be, the DJ used to sort of be master of his own destiny.
True.
And that's why people went around and shook hands with him, you know, so they could get a relationship. And if the DJ liked you, he'd play it. And, now he can't.
Exactly. Unless you're doing what we're doing today.
Right.
College radio, freeform radio, public radio. It's,
well, and satellite radio, of course.
And satellite,
it's great,
yeah.
Because there's such diversification, you know, likely your thing is going to fit in it. But it's still not the DJ. It's the program director, you know.
That's right.
But there's a lot of airplay for a lot of underdogs in satellite radio, which is really great. But that really changed, you know. So I think a lot of what has changed is, and you have to look at the bigger changes that affect everything, not just the music industry. And I talked about our mick culture and the
right.
corporatization of things. I think, you know, the individual, the power of the individual is still great, because it always takes somebody to say yes or no, but that individual has more strings attached to him to make those decisions, I think, than he once did.
Oh, well spoken, Webb. I believe that. You hit it on the head there. What do you listen to unwind? Like, what's in your CD player, man?
Well, you know, let's see, what's in my CD player? I listen to satellite radio, and I listen to various CDs, and I gotta say, I often go back. So, lately, I've been listening to the Everly Brothers.
Okay.
And I've been listening to Bob Dylan's radio show and Tom Petty's radio show and Marty Stewart's radio show and Bill Anderson's radio show, all on XM. So, you know, you get a lot in that way.
Well, what's the whole thing with, you know, rock giants, rock legends doing radio?
I don't know. It is interesting. I think that in some cases they might have always had a closet desire to do it, which
yeah.
is sort of interesting. But I guess it's just an opportunity, and it's an outlet, and it's a growth thing for them. And they, like me, have eclectic tastes, and I think that's the cool thing about all those guys' shows, is that, like, if you listen to Dylan or Petty or Marty's shows, you'll hear all genres and periods of music. So it's an edifying thing for me, and in the case of Petty especially, I'll go like, damn, I wish I could talk to him, because we like a lot of the same records, you know.
I didn't even know that Tom Petty was on, what I take it, satellite radio. Was it XM radio?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Wow. I'm going to have to look into that.
It's pretty cool. It's called Buried Treasure.
Oh, okay. I know Little Steven's got the Underground Garage thing.
And that's serious, and if I could hear both, I would hear both. And, of course, there's talk of the merger where they'll all be one, and no one knows where that's headed.
Yeah, yeah. Again, you know, corporatism, who knows what's going to be in the future, you know. Okay, let me ask you this. Now, let's say you're planning a vacation, and I don't know how often you get to take those because you're a pretty hardworking man, but let's say you're planning to take a vacation, and you're going to take one CD with you or one album with you, just one that you want to...
Oh, gosh.
Just one that you just want to, you know, spend a week with or so, and then... All of a sudden, you find out that wherever you've gone, you're stranded there for a lifetime, And now you've got this one CD with you, or this one album with you. What did you take with you, Webb?
Gosh, I could sort of maybe name the contenders.
Okay.
But I don't know how I could ever choose the one.
Hmm. It's a hard question. That's why I ask it.
You know, gosh.
It's a hard one, isn't it?
It is. I'll tell you, some albums that come to mind. Though.
Okay.
And I have, ignoble taste. You know, I don't listen to opera or classical music much. I should listen to more classical music. I like Kind of Blue by Miles Davis, and that's easy to listen to and not have it put a kink in your brain.
Yeah.
But truth be known, I would have to make a little stack that I'd have to decide between, and you think, okay, well, what are some of your favorite albums? And I love the band's second album, the Brown album.
Mm-hmm.
I love No Dice by Badfinger.
Badfinger, yeah.
I really love the Good Boys When They're Asleep Faces Collection.
Faces Collection, okay.
I love the individual albums, and I bought them when they were new.
Uh-huh.
But Ian McLagan, once again, had a lot to do with that, and I think the mastering may be even better on that than the box set, although you get all this cool BBC and all this other shit on the box set. It wouldn't be bad to have to be stuck with a Sam Cooke's greatest hits or a Hank Williams' greatest hits.
Well, there you go.
It's really tough,
Well, that's why I ask it. And sometimes you never know what you're going to hear. Sometimes, an artist will just pick one and that's it. And then other times they can't answer it. They just can't,
I do find myself when people say, what do you think is the ultimate album or whatever? And I kind of think they mean, in the rock context of when the album was king. And
yes.
The band's second album is really, really hard to beat. I mean, Rubber Soul, any Beatle album is way up there. And in a way, the Beatles are really more above everything than anything. And I remember, as like a 12-year-old and 14-year-old, I totally just put them, like on a higher shelf, and then it's everybody else, It's kind of intimidating, and if I hadn't checked out all those other people, I might never have performed because, I can't play in tune or sing that high.
Can you remember the first record that you bought, Webb?
Well,
because I can remember the very first record that I bought.
What was it?
The Allman Brothers Live at the Fillmore East.
Wow, well, you were not a kid.
No.
You were a teenager.
Yeah.
That's a hell of an album, though.
Yeah.
And I spent some time with it about a year ago. I just kind of left it in my CD player in the car and listened to it a lot.
Yeah.
But, I remember the first albums. And once again, this was like the fourth grade or something. I ordered and I didn't know that the movie period was bad back then, I ordered Elvis Presley, It Happened at the World's Fair,
okay.
And Ricky Nelson's Million Sellers from Sears.
Wow, okay.
And one of the first 45s I had was the Marty Robbins Gunfighter Ballads and Trail Songs or whatever that was an EP that looked like the album, but it was an EP. It had Big Iron, which was, I guess, a crossover hit, and I remember I bought High Heel Sneakers by The Searchers, which also had Love Potion Number 9.
Love Potion Number 9.
On the other side, because my friend Paul McDaniel assured me it was good.
Wow, see, I wasn't buying records, and when I was in fourth grade, I had to wait a little bit, I guess. I was listening to radio, but I wasn't buying music until 1971. And again, like I said, my first one was the Allman Brothers Band. And it is. Well, it kind of defined where my head was going to go with music. Not that I was a huge Elvis fan when I was a kid, and of course, loved all the movies and everything. But I look back on them now, and they're kind of kitschy. But any bands, past or present, that you'd like to share the stage with?
Well, sure. And I've shared the stage with Jerry Lee Lewis,
The killer himself, yeah. And Bo Diddley, very cool.
We actually backed him up. We were his band during his portion of the show. And you know, NRBQ. We did some shows with them.
Wow, nice.
And the Georgia Satellites and Melissa Etheridge and various people we've played with. But, you know, a lot of the people I would like to have shared stages with are gone.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other people that I'd like to do shows with. And, the Yahoos, Southern Culture on the Skids. I really think that would be kind of cool. We've never done a show with them. Trying to think who else is Jimmy Vaughn.
Oh, Jimmy, yeah.
I would have said the T-Birds, but, you know,
yeah,
changed.
Yeah.
You know, my old friend Omar has been doing this thing with Jimmy Vaughn and Kim and a lot of those people, Lou Ann Barton, called the Jimmy Reed Highway.
Oh, Omar from the Howlers.
Right.
Yeah.
He's from Mississippi.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, you talked about those sparks. You know, when did the spark happen? Well, obviously, I was buying the records, and, you know, when I got my first guitar and learned to play and sing a little bit, and the first guy I ever sang and played in a room two guitars with, this guy named David Otwell, when I was probably 12, you know, all those things. And then, you know, seeing the faces live, God, that was my ultimate audience member epiphany.
You were fortunate enough to see that band live.
I saw a lot of the great British bands at a place in New Orleans called The Warehouse, because it was like 100 miles away.
Okay.
And so I saw Badfinger. I don't think they were at The Warehouse. It was in an auditorium, but it was in New Orleans. I saw the Faces, and, you know, I saw the Stones and Mobile and 72, Exile, new album, and Stevie Wonder was the opening act. So I got to see some great stuff. I saw Ray Charles in my hometown.
Excellent.
At the little Coliseum. I saw Delaney and Bonnie there. I saw Blood, Sweat, and Tears there. I saw the Vanilla Fudge, Steppenwolf, you know.
Speaking of Vanilla Fudge, I'm sure you know who Carmine Appice is.
Well, and you go back and listen to Keep Me Hanging On, and his drumming is the coolest thing about it.
He actually is a regular feature on my show, along with radio stations all across the country, and we do this little bit called Where in the World is Carmine? And in fact, I'll be talking to him later this afternoon. He calls every week and just talks about, you know, life on the road or what he's doing and, you know, his projects and this and that. So it's very cool to hear the, you know, Vanilla Fudge dropped by another artist when they mention
their name. That is really cool. Now, who's he playing with now?
Right now, he's working on a thing called Slam, which is an all-percussion thing that he's trying to get and take on a national tour. And he just landed something with NASCAR and ESPN, where they wrote a theme for NASCAR. And he is going back out on the road with Vanilla Fudge. In fact, he's got a date coming up shortly. So he's still working with the Fudge. He just put out a DVD with Cactus a couple of months ago from a performance at B.B. King's, and he's doing pretty well, you know, and we get to talk to him every week, so it's kind of cool that you dropped the Vanilla Fudge thing, because I've got a pretty close connection with Carmine now, and it's very cool, you know.
Well, that is cool. You know, that was my first, like, Coliseum rock show, and with Vanilla Fudge, and my father had died. I was, like, 14, and I'd kind of freaked out, and hadn't really been out in public, you know, and a few weeks passed or whatever, and I went to that with the guys who were in my first band. I started playing my first band at 14, and I was just like, wow, you know, I was so buzzed, and
sure,
this cool-looking guy with long hair and a leather jacket got on the drums, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought he was a rock star, but he was the roadie.
That's funny.
Yeah, he was just like making sure everything worked.
Making sure everything works.
They came out and they kicked ass, you know.
Oh yeah, no doubt, and they still do. They just, in fact, they just released a cover album. It's called Out Through the Indoor. It's an entire cover album of Zeppelin tunes, and it's actually pretty good. But it's only available as an import.
I'm sure Carmine has the chops to totally note for note do the Bonham stuff.
Oh yeah. And add some of his own stuff to it,
sure,
as well, you know.
Well, he was an innovator. He really had style, and he was the most British-sounding player in Vanilla Fudge, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, of course, later he played with Rod Stewart and all that.
Let me ask you, what is the best way for people to find out about Webb Wilder and keep in contact with you? And maybe you could tell the listener how they can find you on the World Wide Web.
Well, there's webwilder.com, and we have a very active message board, and some of the diehard fans are wonderful people, and they're on there regularly, and it's like sort of a community of webheads, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and I'm on there, too, and then there's the MySpace thing, which is linked to webwilder.com. And then there's webwilderfilms.com, which is linked to webwilder.com. And then the tour dates are always on webwilder.com and the accompanying MySpace thing, which I can't exactly remember the designation of, but it's linked to webwilder.com.
And I actually see that you are going to be making it somewhere near us. I'm not sure exactly where, but in August, August 30th and Sunday, August 31st. Does this mean you're doing two shows at the Johnstown Folk Festival?
Well, maybe we are. I know we're appearing there.
Okay.
I didn't remember about the two shows, but I do know that during the course of that event, it'll be a rare, what is now a rare appearance of Jason and the Scorchers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. So it's on your website. It says August 30th and Sunday, August 31st.
Well, now that's starting to, I'm remembering that when the agent ran all that by me. Yeah, I think we are.
You are.
We're definitely going to be there, and it sounds like to me that we'll be there twice.
Yeah, it sounds like you're doing two shows there, and that looks like the closest to us here in this in the northern part of the country in Pennsylvania.
Well, and you know, we've been trying to put together something in Pittsburgh. I'm not sure how close that is.
Well, okay, I'll tell you, we're located 50 miles north of Philadelphia and about 75 miles west of New York City. So Pittsburgh's
wow.
All the way on the other side of the state.
Well, you know, we played the Rodeo Bar in Manhattan twice last year.
Okay.
And, you know, we hadn't played in Manhattan in years. And that was really fun to get that jolt of that New York energy, and the old fans came out, and, you know, it was really cool. And we need to get back to Philadelphia. We used to play the North Star Bar there years ago. I don't even know what became of it.
I think it's still around.
Cool.
Yeah, you got to make it up here. Do you think about, you know, getting to the northern part of the country? And when was the last time you actually played in the Pennsylvania area, do you know?
You know, we played a little amphitheater kind of near Gettysburg, I think.
Oh, okay.
And, a year or two ago, and we're supposed to go back there sometime, and I can't remember the name of the spot. It was a very lovely venue and setting. But
Gettysburg is not too far from us. It's about, I'd say, about 80 miles west-southwest of where we're located.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not too far.
The closest we've been to you is the Rodeo Bar, I guess. And, you know, we try to do D.C. a time or two a year.
Okay.
Well, but we used to play Philadelphia with some regularity. In the old days, we played the Decade in Pittsburgh.
All right.
Which was a scene, man. That was quite a place. And they had like an anniversary homecoming of all the bands that used to play there. And we had a schedule conflict and we couldn't do it. I can't remember what that was.
All right. All right, so anyway, we can definitely find out more about you, and I got to say, man, there's a lot of info on your websites.
Well, thanks. You know, my webmaster, Mike Rollo, does an incredible job, and I'm blessed to have such good people like my agent Nancy Lewis Pagel and my band and all the guys that play in it, and Tom Comet, you know, our bass player, does so much more than play bass, and great to have Jimmy Lester aboard for more or less 20-something years now. So, and I've got access to several great guitar players. So, you know, we've started doing the next studio album, actually, on A Wing and a Prayer. We began that, I don't know, months ago, and I was hoping to get back in the studio this month, and some things got in the way.
Okay.
But we'll, you know, we're working on that too. So I'd really like to see that come out between now and September. But we'll have to get it made before we know when it comes out.
Well, very good. We'll be looking forward to it. And once again, let me tell the listener right now: the latest thing out is "Born to Be Wilder," Webb Wilder and the Beatniks, recorded live, and it's on Blind Pig Records. And by the way, Webb, give some kudos to the band. Great job, and of course. You know, you're doing your thing and doing it as well as anybody can be, Webb Wilder. You really got it down, man, and it's a great record from you and the band. So be sure to pass that on that up here in Pennsylvania. We're digging the record, man.
I'm very appreciative of that, and I will pass it on, and they'll be totally jazzed to hear it.
All right, brother. Well, I want to say thank you for the music, most of all, Webb. Thanks for the rock and roll, man.
Well, I'm glad to know it's being appreciated. Thank you, AJ.
Oh,
you're welcome.
It's my pleasure. And as we get closer to August and this festival in Johnston, maybe we can talk again.
That would be great.
To, you know, just kind of get the listeners pumped and stoked and ready to go out and see you out here in Johnston back in, let's see, later on in August, all right?
Man, that sounds great. We'd love to do it.
Well, okay, cool. Well, then we'll reach out to you again in midsummer, I say, and we'll talk again if that's all right with you.
It's more than all right with me. I'd love to.
All right, man. Anything that you would like to impart on the listener before we let you go?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Just seek some stuff out, you know. There's always some good music out there. Sometimes it's harder to find than it used to be, but there's tons of stuff out there, and I know all the other people doing live shows feel just like me. They really appreciate it when you turn out, because I know you've got a lot of other things yapping at your heels, demanding your time. So
sure,
we appreciate it.
All right. Can you hold the line for a second, Webb?
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much, Webb, and thanks for the music, bro.
You got it.
All right. Hold on. 91.3 FM, WLVR, Bethlehem. You're listening to Fritz Rocks and in the exclusive interview with Webb Wilder. We got some more Webb for you. Listen to this.